Thanks to DigitalOcean for sponsoring Does Not Compute. DigitalOcean is the easiest cloud platform to run and scale your applications. From effortless administration tools to robust compute, storage, and networking services, DigitalOcean provides an all-in-one cloud platform to help developers and their teams save time while running and scaling their applications. DigitalOcean offers predictable and affordable pricing so you can leave those complex pricing structures behind. With DigitalOcean, you always know what your business will pay per month with industry-leading price performance and at a flat pricing structure across all global data center regions. Now, I personally have been using DigitalOcean for all my side projects, and I couldn't ask for anything more, and I'm going to be using them to build my next app, and you should too. You can get started today with a free $100 credit at do.co/doesnot. It only takes a few minutes to get up and running. Again, that's do.co/doesnot. to receive $100 of credit towards a flexible and scaling hosting solution for your next application. Welcome back to the real world from vacation land.
Yeah, I'm still haven't actually gotten a lot of work done since that vacation, but that's just how it goes sometimes.
sliding back into the routine, I guess.
Trying to get caught up and just get my ducks in a row.
Yeah, well, things over here in Design Collective world are as crazy as ever. Things are moving fast. Things are happening. So that's good. I think I'm busy enough for the both of us.
I went on vacation, and so we've had basically 2 weeks between recording now.
Yep.
And 2 weeks of Sean being super productive and me sitting on my butt the whole time. So
I don't know about that.
I'm really curious to hear what you've had cooking up here.
We got several irons in the fire, my friend. We have several. So let me think.
Is that why it's so hot here?
It may be. I'm sending all you guys. Oh, it's hot here too. It's hot right now. I should have left my fan on, but I didn't.
And you're coming back now, right?
Yeah, I fly back in on Saturday, actually. So I'll be back in my office with air conditioning and my mechanical keyboard and my standing desk and my big screen
and
monitor.
Guitar.
And my guitars. Yeah, it'd be nice. My Linux computer. I think my least favorite thing about being here is that when my MacBook Pro gets warm, it makes my hand sweat. I don't like it because it's like my whole computer's made out of metal, right? The whole thing is aluminum, so the whole thing gets hot. So when I'm trying to type, I'm resting my palms on a hot piece of metal. And my least favorite thing, even more than that, I hate that my trackpad feels. Have you ever like skidded bare knees on a gym floor?
Oh God,
that's what the trackpad feels like when I use it because the thing is just warm. I don't like it.
So. It's pronounced aluminium.
Aluminium. Well, I don't want it. I don't want it. I wish I had an external keyboard here and like a monitor, like a riser for it, but I don't. So I'm making do. But yeah, things are. I don't know, things are going. So I had one person message me and say they were excited to hear about how things with Absinthe were going. Because I think I talked about building a GraphQL endpoint or working on a GraphQL endpoint for Design Collective with Absinthe. Have I mentioned that?
Yeah, you mentioned it, but I don't think we went into it. You were just starting working on it, so.
Yeah, well, yeah. So let's talk about this.
Yeah.
I have some things to say and ask about. More so ask because I don't know anything.
Well, first of all, so you've got a few of the endpoints in production now, right?
No. I do not.
Oh, okay.
So let's rewind here. So I have been working on the shipping integration, which is almost done, but the whole story of this integration, I think the whole story of working with an enterprise company is hurry up and wait. So you have all this stuff to do, but then you have to wait on somebody else to do something. So that's what I've been doing. So in my waiting times, I would spend some time on this GraphQL endpoint. So I was still kind of being productive and doing something towards the future. And yeah, so I've been working on this Absinthe GraphQL endpoint while I'm waiting for my friends over at Acme Shipping Co. to approve my production app. It's been like 24 hours and they haven't sent me my production keys yet. Anyhow, yeah, so I've been...
That's frustrating.
It is frustrating. And everything's good to go. I've done all this work. It's pretty cool how it works, actually. So to explain that in a very quick nutshell, I don't know if anyone finds this interesting. But basically, we ship large items all over the U.S. And so we're working with an external shipping company that does white glove shipments and they handle coordinating everything. So that's the hardest part, right? Is making someone feel comfortable. Like if you're buying a couch, you want to feel comfortable and know it's going to arrive safely and not damage, and it's going to arrive on time. And so this company allows us to do that because they have all this infrastructure. I think their stats are like there's at least one order placed every 30 seconds on their platform.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they're pretty big. And so we're using them. So they have an API that we have to use. So when you're hitting our checkout endpoint and you go to the shipping portion, you can choose if you want an item to be shipped or to pick it up. And if you click shipped, we have that Rube Goldberg machine that I described at one point, where you just kind of like tumble through the ranks. And so you land on a matching, when you land on a matching product or a matching query, or not query, condition is what I'm trying to say. When you land on a matching condition, it goes through and gets the rate. So if it's too big for USPS, then we make a request to Acme Shipping Co. They say, they give us a fixed price actually. So they're like, it'll cost us much. And then we show the user, it'll cost this much. So the user just sees one option. They see like, hey, for white glove shipping, guaranteed blanket wrap, pickup delivery, this is how much it's going to cost. And it's actually a lot cheaper than I thought it would be. So anyway, they select the number and then they go to checkout. And so after checkout's been completed, we have a number of things that happen. So when a checkout is finalized, we spin up different tasks. One task is to send a receipt. Another task is to create a listing. So if a user has checked out and they selected this white glove option, then we create a listing on the Shipping Co's API. And then our team that handle helping customers, they can log in to the dashboard for the shipping company and they can see all these automatically created listings. So it has like origin, destination, timeframes. It has the product photos. It has descriptions of each product. So basically any carrier can log in and see the listings and make a bid on it.
Okay, that's cool. And those are all, you fire them off with like rescue tasks, something like that?
Yeah, pretty much. I just put them all in because we're using Redis anyway. So I just throw them off into the Redis queue and then Redis comes along and does what I need when it has time.
Cool.
Yeah. So what was I getting to? GraphQL?
Well, so you've got that all buttoned up and you're just basically waiting on the API, production API keys.
Yes.
Okay. But it's all done. It works.
Yeah, so far.
Be done with that for now, hopefully.
Again, I'm not saying shipping company's name because I don't want them to feel like I'm dragging them through the mud, because they do provide a service that I find very valuable. It's just that I might as well have joined the circus through the number of hoops I've been jumping through the last few weeks. So our rate requests are limited. Our API requests are limited to 2 per second, I think, in production.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah. And the auth tokens only last for 10 minutes and they give us refresh keys. So that's like an OAuth 2 thing. So you might get an auth key and then you might get a refresh key. And the auth token actually just expires in like 10 minutes. And so if it's expired, you have to use the refresh key to generate a new one or just make a new auth request. So yeah, so it's not like you're just sending one request. It's at least two.
Yeah.
If you have to refresh or log in and also create a listing or get a rate. So that was the whole thing I had to figure out. And I'm using a library called, I think it's called a retry. It kind of handles it for you. I think you might find it interesting. But
okay.
Yeah, so you put, it's a bunch of macros that you can use. So you can say retry with a linear back off do, and then you put whatever function or thing you need done in the block. And then if you return an error, it'll just retry it again on the linear back off whenever that expires.
Oh, this is an Elixir library.
Yeah. It's an Elixir library that just gives you some macros. So you can say retry with a back off of 10 seconds or 2 seconds or 1 second, whatever, or at an exponential back off and retry at most 3 times. And if it doesn't, then return this error clause. So it's kind of like a with, but it'll just keep retrying until it either returns whatever function returns okay or a successful status, or you've retried too many times or the time frame has expired or something like that. So worked pretty well.
And is that synchronous?
Yes.
So like it will block until something either gives up or succeeds.
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. That's cool. So that, I mean, that works for a scheduled task. Who cares how long it takes, but.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not really concerned because it's not blocking the request at that point. And it's something I need to happen. So again, since our connections or requests are limited so hard, it's not like I can spin up a bunch of async tasks and just start retrying stuff, because we'll probably get in trouble. They probably won't like that. And so, yeah, it has to be synchronous. But again, this isn't like a high traffic endpoint. This is only for people that complete a purchase. So
yeah, it sounds really cool. It sounds like a pretty good, perfect application for that.
I mean, we'll find out.
Yeah.
Yet, but we'll find out.
I don't know if you've ever tried to set up, and I'll gladly throw PayPal under the bus. Have you ever tried to set up PayPal checkout? I think it's called.
I have not.
Oh, God.
I won't utter those words near our Twist channel at all in hopes that nobody thinks, hey, we should have a PayPal checkout.
No, I had like looked at it once and like I didn't even get past the step where you have to authenticate your, like you have to actually email them. No, you have to put in a support ticket just to convert your like PayPal business account into something that can accept PayPal checkout.
Interesting.
And you have to provide all this like paperwork and stuff. And like, I didn't even get past that point. I feel bad because I didn't even try, but it was just so bad. And if I were to revisit that, I'd probably look at, I think Braintree is PayPal's like newer, it's their kind of Stripe equivalent.
Yeah.
And it obviously handles PayPal and I think it handles it in a nicer way. So without using the PayPal checkout flow, because man, that was rough to even look at the documentation for. Talk about your corporate holes you have to jump through.
Yeah.
Hoops you have to jump through. Holes you have to jump in and not come out of.
Now that I think about it, we couldn't use PayPal checkout because we were on the Stripe, we're a Stripe Connect platform. So we couldn't use PayPal if we wanted to.
Yeah, we went back and forth for a while because we've been kind of wanting to roll our own billing at Remote Ham Radio, and we've been using FreshBooks now, but FreshBooks is great because it integrates with Stripe and PayPal seamlessly. You just kind of turn it on and it just works. And a lot of our customers pay through PayPal, like probably half, you know, a lot of people. And I really wanted to just go all Stripe because that way we can do recurring billing. And because PayPal, or excuse me, the way FreshBooks works is you can't really do this kind of recurring billing with metered usage, you know, with like, you know, billing per minute or per hour or whatever.
Right.
You can do recurring fixed invoices, but doing, and also accepting auto payments and stuff is, you can't really do it. It's just their invoices are designed to be paid, you know, one at a time individually. Sure. So every time actually our customers have to pay a monthly invoice, they have to type in their credit card every time, which is awful, right? Like they just want it to be done. But anyway, the point was, I wanted to convert to all Stripe or something more convenient, but like so many people pay with PayPal, it was really nerve-wracking to even think about moving away from that. Now I know like PayPal is just linked to your credit or debit card and you can set up a debit or a credit card with Stripe. So like in theory, everyone would still be able to pay, but I don't know. That was a big decision to like not really pursue it right away because the PayPal thing was really holding us up.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. For us, it was nice because Greenfield, we didn't have to worry about it. And we kind of had to, the Stripe Connect was the only way we could do what we're doing in that we're.
Oh yeah. I mean, you're the perfect use case for that, that product. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's worked pretty well. And the billing has been great because we've been tweaking our plans a little bit. And so now stores have multiple plans to choose from. And what's really cool is that we've noticed that some of our stores that were kind of grandfathered in. So our first stores, like our first 30 stores or so, they were just paying a commission on checkout. They weren't paying monthly at all. And so we've noticed that as we started adding a couple more tiers or another tier that's a little bit cheaper, they started converting over themselves. They're like, oh, that sounds great. And so they're just like, let me pay you monthly now. Where they were kind of getting a lot of stuff for free. Now they're like, oh, we want a little bit more, so we're just going to pay you instead. And Stripe Billing made it pretty dead easy to set up.
Yeah. I mean, I know when GitHub recently, I think it was maybe a year ago, switched over their payment plans. Normally you could like, there are different tiers where you pay more to get more private repos, like 5 private repos, 10 private repos or whatever. And then they added the plan where it's just like, okay, this is a little bit more, but you get unlimited private repos. And I was like, done. Like,
yep.
No, not even a question. I paid that extra and now I just put everything in GitHub. Whereas before I was like, oh, I'll just put some of my stuff in there and self-host the regular stuff, but I don't have issues. I don't have a wiki. But now it's just like, shut up and take my money.
That's funny because I did the same thing. As soon as I saw that it was a flat price, I got my card out and paid right there. So
it was immediate.
Yeah. So about GraphQL.
Yeah.
That's what I've been meaning to talk about for 15 minutes. So GraphQL. Yeah, it was actually a friend of the show, Mason, who I think I'm going to be meeting up with on Friday. I've never met him, and we're meeting up at a Starbucks here, which is pretty cool.
Wait, Dave, Starbucks in California?
Yeah, I go and hang out at one because I can walk to it, and it has air conditioning and has fast Wi-Fi. It's the Starbucks with the fast Wi-Fi. That's the one I go to.
Nice.
So I go there. And so, yeah, so he was asking me about Absinthe, how that's going. And it's going well. I haven't worked on it in about a week just because I got some momentum there. So I stopped working on it. And in the meantime, I think part of my job is the CTO is to look around at what could benefit us and what we could adopt going forward. And so I found, I don't know, like I've heard about Prisma a few times, which I've been linking you a bunch of links over the past few weeks, maybe a month or two, about kind of like bolt-on solutions for GraphQL APIs. And there are a bunch now. So there's like Prisma, there's Graphile, there's one called Asura. They just seem like they're popping up more. But essentially, we already have a Postgres database. That's where all of our stuff lives. That's where all of our data lives. And so these solutions, they kind of bolt on. So you deploy a server, you tell it to connect, how to connect your database, and it does some sort of introspection. And it pulls in, and most of them you can actually configure, but it pulls in the tables and it auto generates a schema for you. And then you can just suddenly query by that schema.
Yeah, that's kind of a wild concept, like just having a GraphQL pipeline straight into your database. So that's basically what it is, right?
Exactly what they are.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it made me feel real uneasy at first. I was like, this seems weird. Like, I don't know how to do this outside of a custom software. I've never used, for anything big like this, I've never used like a CMS. I've never used any like pre-built solution, you know? So there's all like these headless CMSs and all that stuff that people are adopting. I've never used anything like that. I've always just done things custom in Elixir for our app. And so at first I was very skeptical and I was like, okay, well, this Asura looks interesting. I'm going to try it because they had a one-click deploy to Heroku. So I was like, all right, I'll try it. What can it hurt? So I pushed the button and I hooked it up to our staging database because I'm being careful. And obviously I wouldn't hook up to my production database right away. And I kid you not, in less than 5 minutes, I was able to have a fully functioning GraphQL API for every schema or for every table in our database. Now you can turn tables off or turn tables on. You can say like only import these ones, but I just said do them all. And in 5 minutes, I was able to actually get every, like, so basically what I had spent doing a week and a half doing, I had much more progress done. So in about 5 minutes, it did what I was, what would have probably taken me a couple of months to do, if I'm being honest about it.
Right, right. Wow.
And it's crazy. So there's this, I think I sent this to you a while back, but there's like this standard coming around called OpenCRUD. And when I first saw it and I sent it to you, I was like, this seems weird. This seems like the JSON API spec of GraphQL. I was like, well, the whole point of GraphQL is that you can build a schema how you need it to be built and you're not having to get stuck to a rigid structure, right?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Hasura is not like because I asked him, I was like, hey, are you guys using OpenCRUD? And they said, we're not specifically, but we should be compliant. So basically what it is, it's it's literally a SQL DSL in pre-built interfaces and types in GraphQL. So it's hard to describe. So,
well, so basically in addition to your tables, you get clauses, you do and ors and nots and combine.
Yes.
You can basically nest sort of, I don't know, indefinitely, but you can nest conditions in there, right?
Yes.
By using interfaces, right? GraphQL interfaces.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could, it was crazy because when I was working in Absinthe, and I'm not saying like, I don't like Absinthe and I don't think I'm going to use Absinthe. I'm still kind of on the fence on things. But when I was doing Absinthe, I was like, okay, well, I have my products field now. Okay, so we got to slap stores on there, or let's reverse this. We got a stores field, and then stores have a relation to products. And so now you can do stores where ID equals 10 products. I was like, okay, well, how do I filter products? Oh, I have to build all that too, which makes sense. But it's kind of like when you're looking at a wall and you don't really know how to scale it, you don't really think about, oh, I have to do this as well. You know, you're like, well, how do I do this next? It's kind of like blinding in a sense, right?
So one of these things we talked about was how do you put application logic into here, because now you basically just have SQL.
Yeah.
So like, and that works well for structured data that is not computed, right? It works well for stuff that's in your database, like you said, products and stores and stuff. But mm-hmm. then you get into things like prices, and prices in your application are very dependent on the context, whether there's a sale, who the user is, that sort of thing. So like, that stuff doesn't seem nearly as straightforward. Like, it wouldn't be as big of a win. So how do you handle something like that?
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons why I'm still just kind of like keep an eye on things. I have plenty to do to keep me busy in the meantime. So I haven't been working on Absinthe as much, just in case something, there's like some breakthrough with one of these solutions where I'm like, oh, this solves my problem. But what you're saying is like, so you mentioned prices specifically. And on Design Collective, a price isn't a price. It's different for each user. So if you look at a product and you're just a base role user, you might see one price. But if I look at a product and I'm a trade account user, or my role is trade or something, I might see a different price. And then a product can also be on sale, right? So there's all these different conditions that determine what a product's price is. And so how did you do that? Because the only way I've used, like up until now, the only way I know how to do something like that is an application code, right? So whether it's presenter, when you're serializing the data, that field gets augmented, or maybe you add like a virtual field onto your schema and that goes out the door in JSON, right? My answer in Absinthe was just have a custom resolver for the price field, which was easy because in Absinthe, you have a context struct that gets passed around. And so you can put stuff in that, and that gets passed through all the way through your resolver. So if you have a product type and you have a base price in cents and a sale price in cents, you could resolve each of those fields differently. And by default, it's just map.get. So it'll have the parent struct, it'll map.get on the parent, and that's what the value is. But you can also pass it a custom function. And so you could actually hit an external API. You could check Redis for something, or in my case, I can check to see who the current user is and what their roles are and what the store settings might be, right? And then return a price that way. Okay. So that's how I did it in Absinthe. And in Hasura, the answer is do it in SQL if you can. So
okay.
What's interesting is they have a section in the documentation, which I'll link to, called derived data. And so one way to do that would be to use a Postgres view. So you just create a view and attach it to that field. And then when someone queries for that field, it returns the value of the view instead of the value of what's stored in that column.
That's kind of cool because you kind of have to be a SQL, I won't say wizard, but you have to, you know, be comfortable writing
right
sort of procedural SQL, but you also get the advantage of, well, all the data computations being done in the database, and you're not
sure
fetching a million records and doing things. You kind of optimizes it a little bit.
It's very, very fast. I'll say that. It's yeah, incredibly, I believe, fast. So what I was saying before with OpenCRUD, and my first realization was, oh, I have a lot of work to do now in Absinthe to basically make fields inside of fields queryable, or filterable rather. And that just came out of the box. So I could query for stores, do like not like deleted at not equals null, where name is some name, and then query for products where deleted at's not null, where product sale price in cents is greater than zero. So you can just like keep going down the tunnel, so to speak, and just keep slapping queries on there.
Okay, so I have a couple of issues with this. I'm going to be the kind of devil's advocate here, okay?
Sure.
So having not, you know, played with this at all, just how you described it and looked at it a little bit. On one hand, it's cool to have all the filtering stuff and ordering and, you know, all the other features that OpenCRUD or whatever gives you. But at the same time, like, you almost fall in the same trap of designing like RESTful. You think of a RESTful controller, a traditional CRUD RESTful controller, where you're like literally just doing the same thing. You're adding and removing, updating, you know, doing CRUD in a database, right? Mm-hmm. Just one row, update it, maybe update some other stuff and save it, delete it, whatever. But in your specific application, I'll say, like, there's very few actually instances where you need all that complete functionality in terms of, like, let's just say filtering, for example, right?
Right.
Or conditions, right? Like, you have a couple of very specific views, and since you're the consumer of your own API, you know exactly what you need, right? So, like, in my mind, you almost want to, like, just develop the API endpoints that you need and no more, right? That's kind of, it reduces the surface of your API. It makes the testing easier. Like, how do you even test? How do you even test a Hasura API? You can't.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you probably can, but not its traditional methods. You have to use some something that's automated that can test all the different fields and types and everything and make sure they make sense. You lose the sense of business logic and more just like, you know, having a database exposed over an endpoint.
Yeah.
That just seems like for maybe for an MVP or a proof of concept, I can definitely see the appeal there, where especially if you're really strong with front end design and you don't want to spend a lot of time doing the back end, again, especially if it's just a proof of concept, like it seems like a really cool solution for that. But it seems like, I mean, the beauty of GraphQL is how easy it is, especially in Absinthe, to like create all this custom business logic, and the shape of your API matches the shape of your application.
Yep.
And here you just lose that. Everything just becomes flat again.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just my initial, like, you know, has my kind of the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
No, I mean, I have the same reservations about it too. Especially, so it's tough because I keep going back and forth. Like I talked to Paul, and so I want to enable Paul to, because he's like heading out product development and design and kind of like exploration there, right? And so my job more and more, like I was kind of joking with Paul today, and I was like, I reviewed a pull request he had on the front end app, and I was like, this looks foreign to me. I haven't looked at the view app in so long. It's weird. It's been like a few weeks since I've written JavaScript, which that's never been, this is new for me. I've been writing Elixir only basically for the last few weeks. And so I'm thinking about, I want to give him room to run, and I want to give him room to experiment. So, I mean, an early state, like we're early stage and we're still working on becoming profitable. And a large part of that, or what can contribute to that, is being able to iterate quickly. Does this work or does this work? Does that work or does that work? And so one of my devil's advocate you're advocating is, I can see where it's like, yeah, everything's flat again. And there's not really a context, and it's not designed to what you need to do. But at some point, I think that could be useful, because then he's not stuck to what we have now. And for him to build views and pages in new ways, he doesn't have to ask me to do anything. He can query to his heart's content to design and build this thing. And he doesn't have to wait on anybody to implement anything, to change anything, et cetera. Now, with that said, the big hang up I have is, like you said, how do you test it? I have no idea. So on top of the Postgres views, which is cool, like you said, it kind of forces you to go into SQL land, which I think is great. It's kind of like really energized me in digging deeper into SQL, because that's where my app is. And I should be as familiar as I possibly can be with SQL. I think that's important too. So it's kind of pushing me down that rabbit hole. But how do you test that? I have no idea. So another layer, so you can do some business logic on that side. So I guess Postgres has some role-based stuff in it. So you can do role and authorization logic, I guess, with Postgres. And so you can actually go in and say, create a new role in Hasura and say, for this field, if the user with this role is accessing it, then use this view or use that view, right? So you can sort of say, solve the pricing problem that I have in Hasura without having to do any sort of application logic. But again, you can't test that. Also, another problem that I'm seeing is that, how do you handle migrations? So Hasura doesn't change the database it's hooked up to. It kind of lives alongside of it. But when you're configuring it, it has its own database. So you have to have something running in dev, and you have to have something running in production, and running migrations between the two is a little bit clunky, because they have migrations stored in YAML files. And so you would actually have to go and run a migration against your production Hasura instance. So maybe that's not clunky, but for me right now it is, because right now I get push and things are good. You know, my database is up to date, and I suddenly don't have things fragmented across two data stores. So yeah.
So if theoretically you were to develop new features based on Hasura or something similar, what would be the plan for migrating that to production? Would it just, because I always worry about, oh, this is just for MVP, and you know, 6 years later, and I'm in a 7,000 line jQuery file,
right?
to use a specific example with my front end here, like, Yeah, that's, you got to watch out for that too, obviously, because then it's like, oh, well, it already works. Why am I going to put in all this work to just recreate something that already works? It's hard to justify, but.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, to the migration thing, I'm sure that can be automated in the same way that you can do a post-deploy hook in Heroku and it'll run your migrations for you. I'm sure you could do something like that as well.
It'd be cool if you could just like take the, because you said Hasura has some kind of way to export the schema.
I thought so. I'm not 100% sure, to be honest.
Or you could at least just have a way to introspect the Hasura, just the regular GraphQL schema that comes back.
Yes.
The spec for it, and just make a little script that just spits out at least your boilerplate absinthe. I mean, that would be interesting too, right?
Yeah. I mean, it builds a lot of crap, man. It builds like, I'm actually like, if I'm thinking about re-implementing, because I do like, maybe it's shiny bells and whistles, but I do like having the open CRUD style querying available to basically any of my queries, right? I thinking about Paul designing to his heart's content and building out and testing things on the front end to his heart's content, that's what I would want to give him and whoever else ends up being on the team, because that just gives them room to run and live their best life, I guess, right? But then looking at the document explorer, so the Hasura engine actually embeds the graphical interface in the console. And I started looking at the query root, and it's like, I can scroll for miles. It's kind of intimidating how much it generates. It's kind of crazy.
That's kind of one of the problems with the GraphQL spec too, how flat it is. But
yeah,
that's another discussion.
Yeah. And I mean, so I'm looking at the addresses field. And so every field, I have like 50 tables in my database, and there's a field for each one: addresses, store addresses, product, or like product addresses, user addresses. Like there's so many, and each one of them has a limit, offset, order by, and where arguments or input types specified for each one. So it's like, it's so much stuff, and that's really what makes me feel like, how could I not use it? Because I get so much for free. But then, like you're saying, devil's advocate, just, it's not, it's super flat, it's not custom, it's not something that I made. I don't know.
This is an old post. It's on a blog called Brightball by Barry Jones. And I'm going to put this in the show notes and send it to you. It's called Insanity with Elixir plus Phoenix plus PostgreSQL. And it says, disclaimer, this is not a how to build a blog article. If you do what I'm about to do, people will look at you funny and probably should. And basically he builds an entire like blog engine or whatever, just using, basically he specced himself into a corner where he basically relied on the database for almost everything.
Sure.
Everything was done in the database as views, a database GUI as his writing tool for the blog, all this crazy stuff. He just goes totally insane and walks you through the whole thing using triggers, views,
yeah.
all this crazy, it's not crazy SQL stuff for real database people, but it's stuff that, as someone who's just used to Ecto and Active Record, you're just not used to it. But
yeah.
Postgres is especially so powerful. So I'll send you this just to see what's possible without even using Ecto, just using Postgres directly.
There's an Elixir library I found recently. I'll link it in show notes as well. But with Apollo, there's a Webpack importer, so you can have like a .gql for your GQL file for your GraphQL documents. And there's a Elixir plugin that's very similar. And I think, I can't remember what the extension is, but you basically just write SQL in a file and then you can run queries via Elixir out of those SQL files. So you could just have a folder with your different operations, and then wherever in your application you need to do the operation, you just run the SQL and pass in, I can't remember if it takes a list or a map, probably a list, keyword list of values, but that it was funny because I was like, oh, that sounds like an Apollo GraphQL query document file.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but I struggle with that because I'm not a Postgres expert. And a lot of the stuff in reading the Hasura docs, you talked about triggers. They would say, okay, well, a question I had was like, what about side effects? So if someone purchases an order, how do I send emails? And they're like, oh, you could... this is crazy to me. So they have a thing called Score, and it's kind of like a trigger, but the trigger sends out a webhook event with JSON, with like the JSON payload that represents the SQL that changed or what was changed. So
okay.
you could set up a trigger to watch the product or the orders table, and you could say when one order dot purchase turns from false to true, trigger this webhook that would send JSON to your app. So it would say, okay, well, let me go ahead and send a receipt now.
I mean, at that point, I'd probably just throw a new row in some kind of like a queue table,
right,
a task table, and just then suck it up
yeah.
on the application somewhere else. But
yeah, so it was kind of like a paradigm shift. So in my mind, yeah. when you purchase something, you send a request to the server does a bunch of things and it returns back, yeah, this was okay. And then the server would have at that point spun off some jobs in Redis, in Ets, in Gents, whatever. It would have spun off some jobs and that would have handled it. So I asked, I was like, well, what about this? And they're like, okay, well, you could look at Score, which is the webhook thing, or you could think about an async kind of driven interface, because with Asura, it also sets up subscriptions automatically. So I'm not sure exactly how you interface with that, but it's something it does. And so there on the tin, it says, okay, out of the box, you get subscriptions. So when value changes in the database, your UI will just update. So they were like, okay, what you could do is you could, in your checkout view, when you click a button, it sends a mutation, and then instead of the server coming back and doing all this stuff, the value in the database would change, and then your UI would see that, and then your UI would just update. And then again, you could also just do the webhook stuff to send receipts or do what else. So it was weird kind of paradigm shift in my mind, because I'm used to thinking in doing everything in just a request. Like a request is how procedurally you do something. If you want to create something, you send a request. If you want to respond to something, you send a request and you get data back, right? Or you ask for the data. Whereas they're like, oh, well, your UI can just be reactive, and when data changes, your UI just changes accordingly.
And is that done through subscriptions?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. And you basically don't have to do anything to set that up. I mean,
sure. Well, that's what they say. I haven't tried it. yeah. But that's what I mean. So like, these tools are very, very interesting, because that's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of time saved. And so from thinking about a startup where we have two programmers and we have a Trello list a mile long, if I want, like, I 100% know that we're going to go GraphQL. That seems like it's the right choice for our platform. And so when thinking about that, I'm like, okay, well, I have a Trello list a mile long. I have this technology that I think is going to help us for a number of reasons. I could A, split time and spend a lot of time and build out this completely custom thing, which I don't think is wrong. Or B, I could spend not a lot of time and bolt on this thing, and I could use it read-only. So Hasura also generates mutations for everything out of the box, as well as subscriptions. So
right.
It doesn't just generate your queries. It's literally everything. Mutations, everything. So in my mind, okay, well, I could use it for a certain number of things and then just have the front-end app still use the REST API to actually do cruddy things, right? So this is like this weird world that I'm living in. I'm like, okay, do I or not, or like what level, where does this fit in the stack, you know?
Yeah, and keep in mind, it's another dependency, something that you have to support, something you have to host.
Yeah.
Something that hopefully is performant enough. I'm sure it is, not a problem, but.
Oh, it's actually like the numbers they have is pretty insane. On like a free tier, it was like 600 requests per second was using 50 megabytes of RAM.
Oh, yeah, okay. So no problem.
Yeah. So yeah, it's all those questions. Like, that's my job, I guess, is to consider those things and make a decision, right? But that's where I am. I'm like, wow, there's a lot of shiny here, but there's also a lot of prickly here.
And like you said, that's just one of these tools that does this. There's at least two others that we know of that are similar.
Yeah. There are a lot. And I don't know. So I guess like my thing is right now is there's plenty of stuff for me to be busy on. So I might as well keep being busy on that stuff.
No, it's cool. I think researching this tech like this is so totally worthwhile. I mean, I said I haven't been working this week. I mean, obviously I've been doing work, but I haven't been doing actually any hard coding. Mm-hmm. But I've got a meeting tomorrow with a company that's interested in what we're doing, and they're in the ham radio space as well. And so I spent the whole day just like playing around with their stuff, you know, looking at their documentation and just playing with their hardware and like getting a feel for it. And it's totally time well spent, even if it doesn't feel like it.
It just makes me paranoid, because now I'm trying to work on stuff and I'm thinking in the back of my mind, do I or don't I, you know? Because I know it will make, for a fact, I know adopting GraphQL will make Paul more productive, which is technically what my job is, right? To obviously make sure things don't go down, but also make the other employees as productive as I can make them. And remove as much friction as I can. So that's like it's a priority for me, even though people are like, oh, it won't directly add to your bottom line. It might, because it makes my employees more productive, which means that they're theoretically able to do a better job in at selling and enticing, right? Which affects the bottom line.
Arguably, the sooner you do it, the more it affects your bottom line even.
Exactly.
So there's that kind of pressure too.
Oh, don't do that, because now I'm like, oh, I could spin up a read-only Hasura instance and let Paul...
Let him loose.
Even if it's just like, yeah, even if it's just like stores and products, like go ham. And because like we wouldn't be removing things from our API. Our API is so functional and usable, you know? So it would only be using GraphQL where he needs it. And I don't know. It's yeah. So there's also the whole thing, like, where does it fit in? Where does that fit into a stack? Because, okay, now we have an Elixir app. We have a Sur engine. Who's responsible for what? And so I started asking that, and people were like, oh, usually there's like one gateway that people set up. So all requests go through the gateway, and the gateway is in charge of this goes to Sur, this goes to the REST API. And I was like, okay, well, there's another dependency. There's another thing to think about. There's another just thing to know about.
Honestly, you can just use plug forwarding and in the Elixir app probably and be done with it.
Right. And so I was like, okay, what about limiting queries? So like a certain user role might not be able to say, hey, show me all the non-published products. And they're like, oh, well, you could use your API gateway to strip out query params from based on a user's role.
No, yeah.
So yeah, I'm playing with Legos here, and the Legos have no instructions.
I mean, it all comes back to like, it's just functions, man.
Yeah.
It's just functions. If you have it in your app, again, I'm just being the little devil on your shoulder. If you have your app immediately clear what it's doing,
yep.
Versus someone having to know this, you know, someone else is looking at this, they have to learn this whole extra set of domain knowledge for how the app runs.
I'm thinking about it, and I mean, we chose Elixir for a reason. It's just functions. You can pattern match on a map and spit out a SQL query. That's pretty amazing. So in thinking about GraphQL and thinking about OpenCRUD, you can get a lot of that for relatively cheap in designing an interface and then setting up the resolvers for that to literally just spit out a SQL query. And so then you could slap that interface on your fields. And theoretically, that would do the thing where you could nest queries down.
You want to do some meta absinthe programming?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm like looking at I'm staring at the ceiling as I'm in my mind now. I'm no longer here. So actually, like, I mean, in the notes that I had that I wanted to, I didn't even talk about what I wanted to talk to you about.
I know. We're already 45 minutes.
So I'll save this for the next episode to entice somebody, but I have a lot of thoughts on Ecto and preloading a lot of stuff up front versus designing functions that do queries for the data they need when they need it. So maybe we can talk about that next time.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that GraphQL had such a massive amount of value for you, was because you have these really tightly, deeply nested, tightly associated data structures, and you have to load all stuff from the database every time. And GraphQL lets you kind of pick and choose a little better what you want, and that has performance and interface and memory and, you know, just complexity improvements. But
oh, don't even get me started on data loader.
Well, okay. Oh, okay. Okay.
Don't even get me started, because you're going to get me started. And I have a lot to say about that too, because I've been using it and it's amazing. So
good. I haven't, and I want to know, but I think we'll have to leave that as a little nugget for next time.
Yeah, we'll have to. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe we can record a midweek episode and just drop two. And that's not going to happen, but now I'm all fired up.
Should we do an after show? No, I think we should save it. This is good stuff.
If you want to get an earful, just hang out in the Spectrum chat room and message me, and I'll drop you an earful. I know our friend Mason that I mentioned earlier has messaged me, and I let him have it. He asked me something about testing Elixir, and I dropped him a wall of text. So if you want to chat, send me a message either there or on Twitter at Sean Washbot.
And also over at spec.fm, we've got a new job board. So if you're looking for any web development or designery jobs, spec.fm/jobs is where you're going to find that. That's brand new. Definitely go check that out.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, we love feedback. We appreciate ratings on iTunes, because that's the world we live in, and that's the game I got to play. We got to have ratings and reviews to get listens there. So we appreciate the 50 of you that have left reviews so far. It means the world to us.
I should go over there. I haven't even gone over there yet. I got to go give us a review.
You got to give the obligatory review. For sure. And also, I wanted to say a special shout out to Mikhail and Sarah for taking care of us, editing in the show, for telling us when we suck and we don't suck and giving us producing advice and all that stuff. We really appreciate it. And yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I shouted you all out and say thank you for the work that you're doing.
And last, of course, we appreciate your feedback. Again, the iTunes shares and ratings are awesome. And just hit us up if you have any questions or ideas for things you want to hear. The show notes for this episode are going to be available at dnc.show. And I think that about does it.
Yep. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Later, man.
Thanks again to DigitalOcean for sponsoring today's episode. DigitalOcean really is the easiest cloud platform to run and scale your applications. Visit do.co/doesnot to sign up and receive a free $100 credit towards your next application. Again, that's a free $100 towards DigitalOcean's effortless administration tools, robust compute storage and networking services, one-click app installs, and even monitoring and alerting services so you can sleep well knowing that your application is running A-OK.
Need like a big light up sign that says live or on air.
Well, the little red circle does pulse at you, but we need like a foghorn, just like when it starts.
That's like the spoiler horn.
Yeah. Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's a thing.